is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
The October 8, 2009 New England Journal of Medicine featured two recent studies about the intensity of the new H1N1 flu virus, both in the United States and the Southern Hemisphere's Australia and New Zealand. Perhaps the most surprising news in the research by the American Centers for Disease Control is that this past spring, 7% of Americans sick enough to be hospitalized with the H1N1 flu have died. That 7% is a higher mortality rate than ordinary seasonal flu. And how many Americans ended up in intensive care with the new H1N1 virus? 25%. This CDC study of the early months in the now pandemic H1N1 provoked Dr. William Schaffner, a Vanderbilt University flu expert, to warn, quote, "Contrary to the perception among many people that this influenza, the novel H1N1, is mild, these data vividly demonstrate that this influenza can make you very, very ill," close quote. The second study in the New England Journal of Medicine about the impact of the new H1N1 virus in Australia and New Zealand showed there was a 1,500% increase in demand there for intensive care units. Since October is only the beginning of the flu season now in the United States, will these disturbing statistics persist throughout the next 5 months into February 2010, when seasonal flu usually declines? One sobering fact: the novel H1N1 virus that first erupted in Mexico last February continued to spread throughout the world without tapering off and was declared an official pandemic by the World Health Organization. Recent headlines underscore who is most vulnerable to this new virus: pregnant women, infants, and school-age and college students. On October 1st, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control reported 100 pregnant women have been hospitalized in intensive care units infected with H1N1, and 28 more have died. On October 2nd, the Albuquerque Journal headlined, quote, "5-year-old and infant die of swine flu. Neither child had chronic medical conditions," close quote. And the 5-year-old girl's only symptom was nausea. The next day, on Saturday, October 3, 2009, a Chavez County healthy 17-year-old teenager was reported dead from the H1N1 flu. And by October 8th, the newspaper's front page said, quote, "Swine flu concerns fill clinics," close quote. One virus expert at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas, also warns of another viral shoe about to drop, and that is the emergence of a more virulent strain of H3N2 in the Southern Hemisphere that is now making its way to the Northern Hemisphere. Its most vulnerable targets are people over 50. Paul Gleason, MD, is professor of molecular virology and microbiology, pediatrics, and epidemiologist in the Influenza Research Center at Baylor College of Medicine. Recently, I talked with him about the second threat of H3N2 coming while H1N1 cases are doubling each week, why the novel H1N1 virus is hitting the young and pregnant population so hard, and yet this time older people seem to have some immunity to H1N1. Dr. Gleason begins with the link between the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic that killed 100 million people and this new H1N1 flu virus.
The 1918 pandemic virus was an H1N1 virus, but the hemagglutinin of the current H1N1 is much different than the 1918 H1N1.
This would explain why WHO and CDC and all of you in the medical community around the world have been especially nervous about this particular recombination that has H1N1 in it because the last major pandemic was H1N1, the 1918 Spanish flu?
Yes, that's true, but that virus in humans has mutated a lot since 1918, and it appears that older people may have had experience with a virus similar to this in their youth, and so they retain that protection against infection with this virus. CDC has demonstrated this by testing sera taken from patients of different ages, and they find that essentially the older you are, the more likely you are to have pre-existing antibodies, and at the same time, they found that those people with pre-existing antibodies will get a boost with seasonal vaccine. In other words, seasonal vaccine will stimulate antibodies against this new pandemic virus in older people. And the younger you are, the less likely you are to have those pre-existing antibodies. And people born in the 80s, 90s, or the 2000s are not likely to have any pre-existing antibodies and are therefore very susceptible to this new virus. And since influenza virus is spread mainly among school children and college students, those are the people who are exposed first, and that's where we're seeing the serious morbidity now.
Could you explain, if this is a novel virus that has North American swine, has avian, and has human in the genetic mix of the virus, how could anyone from any time period have antibodies to something that is this strange?
Well, all influenza A viruses start originally from birds. So all A viruses are originally avian viruses, but then they occasionally infect mammals of different species, and eventually a virus emerges that will spread readily in humans. Now, the pig is generally considered the mixing vessel because pigs have receptors for both avian viruses and human viruses. And influenza viruses have a segmented genome. That is, their genetic material is divided into 8 different segments. And it's very easy then for these viruses to reassort. And they can sort into all combinations, you know, and some of the gene segments may come from pigs, some from birds, and some from human, and that's what's happened in this virus. But right now, let me say, it is a human virus because it is spreading very readily in human populations, so we'd have to call it a human virus. And this winter, we might see seasonal flu, particularly H3N2, produce an outbreak this winter, and we're concerned about that because they detected a new variant in the southern hemisphere this summer, and that might get up here this winter at the usual time for seasonal flu, which would be peaking in the middle of February. And H3N2 has been the major cause of mortality since it appeared in 1968, and it's produced epidemics essentially every other year since it occurred in 1968.
So the possibility is that we might have even a bigger spike in mortality in the H3N2 because of a new variant in its genome sequencing that has first surfaced in the southern hemisphere and could be up here this winter.
Yeah, that's possible because, as we've said, the older population, which usually make up the majority of persons in the excess mortality, seem to be protected against the H1N1. But for some reason or other, they have not acquired protection against the H3N2 variants that have appeared since 1968. So most of the mortality, and this is largely in elderly people, that's occurred since 1968 has occurred in years when we have had H3N2 epidemics. So I think there's a good possibility that we'll have an H3N2 outbreak in midwinter of 2010. The H3N2 is a threat to the elderly population.
Do I understand that one of the ironies is that you and other virologists are actually worried more about H3N2's impact this year than maybe H1N1?
The impact is very different depending on the age. And I think this H1N1 is going to have a very heavy impact on school-age children and college students. And there'll be some tragic deaths occurring in very young, healthy people. The H3N2 is a threat to the elderly. And that's why it's important for everybody to take the seasonal vaccine now as quickly as they can get it, so that they'll be prepared for this winter.
Could you please give your medical perspective on the current normal flu vaccine that would impact H3N2 and the new vaccine, which is just starting to be distributed?
The new vaccine is treated as a strain change by the FDA. In other words, they've examined the virus, and they've looked at its growth characteristics, and they've looked at preliminary data from all the manufacturers, and they've concluded this is like a strain change that we have every year with seasonal flu. And the vaccine is produced in manners that's no different than the seasonal vaccine, which we've been using by millions of doses for the last 50 years, I guess. So we have no concern about anything being special about this vaccine. But from all the data that we've seen, we agree that we can treat this like a seasonal flu vaccine. There's a change, but it's manufactured in the same way as the seasonal vaccine.
What do you say to people who are afraid of getting any vaccination of either of the flu vaccines?
Well, I think they better look at the statistics on the number of people that have been ill, the number of people that have died with this new H1N1 virus, and then they have to weigh the risk and the benefit. And if they think that the risk of the vaccine is greater than the risk for infection with the virus, then they can make their choice. But personally, I think that they are much better off if they take the vaccine and get protected against infection with this new virus. Since August 30th, they would attribute over 10,000 hospitalizations to the new H1N1 virus and almost 1,000 deaths. That's only since September. Each week since September 1st, the numbers have doubled, and we've seen a skyrocketing change in the number of people presenting with influenza-like illness to clinics and emergency rooms. So I think we can expect those numbers to increase, and it does not appear that we've reached the peak of activity for this wave yet. We're still going to see a lot of illness before this fall is out.
You've probably seen it on the internet yourself. All of these warnings, don't get the H1N1 vaccine because it has mercury in it. There's just all kinds of warnings. Could you talk about this H1N1 vaccine?
Well, the vaccine, as I said, is produced the same way as the seasonal flu vaccine. The vaccine that will be given to young children and to pregnant women will have no mercury in it. And the vaccine in multi-dose vials for older people will have the usual amount of thimerosal in it. Now, I want to say that there's no evidence that thimerosal has any toxicity. And the studies have shown that it's rapidly metabolized and excreted in the bile and does not accumulate and produce toxic effects. It's an ethyl mercury, which is very different than the mercury that causes poisoning, which is methyl mercury, and is not metabolized rapidly and tends to accumulate and produce toxicity. So I don't think anybody has to worry about the thimerosal that's in influenza vaccine and the dose that's given. It's not going to cause any harm.
Who at what ages will be able to get the H1N1 novel vaccine?
The goal is to immunize everybody in the country, but obviously, if it's the younger people who are having all the infections and are dying of it, it would be best if it's targeted toward younger population now and pregnant women, because pregnant women have an excess mortality with this H1N1. So it's important that we get an activated vaccine for pregnant women and the live or an activated vaccine for school kids particularly, because if we can get the school kids immunized rapidly, we'll slow down the spread of the virus, and we will be able to immunize the rest of the population, hopefully before they've all been infected.
Why are pregnant women so vulnerable to the new virus?
They're susceptible to it. That's one thing. And pregnant women are vulnerable not because they have any problem with their immunity. They respond to the vaccine very well. But as the pregnancy progresses, the diaphragm is pushed up so that their pulmonary reserve is compromised, and also They don't have the cardiopulmonary reserve that women in their age who are not pregnant have, and therefore they're more vulnerable to, if they get pneumonia with influenza, then they're more likely to die. And the other thing to remember is that if a pregnant woman takes the vaccine, she makes antibodies, which are also passed to her new baby. It's no use to vaccinate babies before 6 months of age, so the only protection they can get against infection is the antibodies they get from the mother. So if the mother is vaccinated during pregnancy, she will not only protect herself, but she will provide protection for her baby that should last, hopefully, for the first 6 months, or at least for the first 4 or 5 months after birth. And that's a very vulnerable period for the baby, too.
What has happened here in the last 4 or 5 months politically, in which H1N1 and developing vaccines has been turned into a political football?
Anti-vaccine groups that seem to be intent on doing this, and it doesn't make any difference whether it's flu vaccine or some other vaccine, and they try to attack it. And I think that's unfortunate because all the studies show that vaccines are very safe, and the amount of disease they prevent is amazing. And in this era of high cost of medical care, we should be doing everything we can to prevent illness and reduce costs of health care, because otherwise we're going to be drowned in the cost of health care. So to go against agents that are as effective as vaccines is certainly against the national interest and our economy.
And that the H1N1 novel virus could just sort of keep perking along until what?
Well, I think it'll produce a pretty sharp outbreak this fall, and then it may die out a little bit, and then it may either recur in the winter or it will come back next year.
In the fall of 2010.
Right.
And the question would be, will it have changed the agglutinate again so that it's more virulent or less?
It usually mutates in response to immunity to the population, and partially, it'll depend on how rapidly we distribute vaccine against the current virus, and then we may see a change. But whether or not it will change the virulence, that's really speculation.
By the middle of next year, what might be the projected deaths from the combination of these two viruses this year? What is normal and what might happen now?
Normal seasonal flu is 50,000 excess deaths, and that's the average. And the direct medical cost plus indirect costs due to disruption of social factors is $87 billion a year just for seasonal flu. So the cost is very high for flu every year.
And how many more than 50,000 would you expect in deaths?
Well, I would expect the total to be, say, 80,000 excess deaths.
Not quite doubling, but getting up there.
Yeah, getting up there. But the age-specific mortality will be different because there'll be much higher mortality in younger people than we usually see.
Another aspect of this novel H1N1 are the differences in symptoms from patient to patient. Recent child deaths in Indiana and New Mexico shocked the parents because each healthy girl had few symptoms other than a sore throat and nausea until each suddenly declined rapidly, went to emergency rooms, and died without any evidence of other medical complications other than lab-confirmed H1N1 virus. The more typical symptoms summarized in the recent CDC research include 39% of the patients had diarrhea or vomiting compared to only 5% with normal seasonal flu. About 40% of H1N1 patients ended up with pneumonia, because the virus attacks especially the lung tissue. All the H1N1 patients had been put on breathing machines, but 7% died. Weigh that higher mortality rate against the fact that about 75% of all these patients in the CDC study have been given antiviral medicines such as Tamiflu. This means even with the antivirals, mortality was higher than normal. As Dr. Gleason pointed out, with the virulent strain of H3N2 now making its way north, on top of the H1N1, deaths from influenza in the United States by February 2010 could nearly double. That's why it is important for older people to get the seasonal flu vaccine as soon as possible, and why those on the list to receive the H1N1 vaccine now being distributed should get that vaccine as soon as possible.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.